Hey, Pirate Nation, this is former East Carolina pitcher Davey Penny of the Keith LeClair era, class of 2003. Keep it tuned to the sports objective as you follow our Diamond Bucks on the road to Omaha, because y'all know, we're going.
You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate baseball.
Welcome in to Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective, brought to you by Next Level Training Center in Greenville, where players train. You can simply go to nextleveltc.com, call them at 252-756-NEXT. I want to thank Trent and Brayden Gainell for all they do. Trent, Brett, appreciate them very much. We've got a stacked panel tonight for Extra Innings. Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you, man?
Doing well, Dave. How are you?
I am relieved. I'm excited. I'm very happy with this weekend. 3-1 for the Pirates. Dr. Gary Overton, former East Carolina baseball coach. How are you, sir?
Really good. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Bubba.
No doubt. And Mike Mullis. Mully, how are you, man?
Everything's good.
A lot of fun this weekend as, again, Pirates take 3 out of 4. Guys, I'll start with Coach O. 3 out of 4, not bad. It could be easily a mop, but we'll take it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes lost in everything is the fact that the American Conference is the 6th, or at times it vacillates between the 5th and 6th rated conference. And anytime you have a series win, that's big. A split, I know to some, that's not where we want to be, but at the same time, sometimes splits are good enough depending on who you play and where you play. But as we mentioned just prior to the show, to win 7 out of 8 against a team like Cincinnati, really good, because it's a team that's on the rise. It's a program on the rise. They're very well coached. And as you mentioned, Dave, a veteran club, a very old club, and usually a club like that's dangerous throughout the year.
And Mully, what were your thoughts on it? I know it's hard to beat a team twice, and the Pirates swept the first time. They got a mop, if you will, and the Clark LeClair early in the season, and now they won 3 out of 4 on the road.
Yeah, I mean, I think the staff would agree that it's just about, you know, winning the game that's right in front of you, and, you know, kind of continuing to do that, because, I mean, it's kind of a blessing and a curse to be mentioned in this field of 20. And obviously that is what the Pirate Nation hopes for, is host of regional and potentially being a national seed. But the reality is you got to win today. You got to win the game that's in front of you. I thought what they put together today with the pitching staff, and you get the innings out again, which, you know, kind of where did that come from? That's what it takes for teams to really move deep into the postseason. So, you know, all in all, I mean, obviously it's a great weekend, and turn the page. It's a short week. Get ready to play Thursday and go out. And I mean, quite frankly, need to get 3 out of 4 this weekend coming up as well.
No doubt. Bubba, what were your thoughts on the series this weekend up there in Cincinnati?
My thoughts were largely some of the things that Coach O and Mully have already touched on. Like Mully was saying pre-show backstage, you know, just in terms of, how competitive the series was as a whole. Every game, with the exception of the first one, really came down to the final inning. And even that last inning of the first game got a little interesting, more interesting than Coach Godwin and staff would have liked, for sure. But, clutch hits, guys finding a way to get the job done. What a weekend for CJ Mayhew.
Oh, no doubt. By the way, we'll have our PGX Pitcher of the Week and our PGX Player of the Week coming up later in the show. This series meant a lot because I know the Pirates, obviously, Tulane is right, you know, close to there. In fact, I guess after the second loss on Friday, or I'm sorry, excuse me, the second game with the first loss of the series and only loss That was when Tulane took the half game lead. So obviously that game was so close, but going back to that second game, Mully, you made a point earlier that I wanted to bring up, and Coach O, and I know Bubba would agree, that when you have a team sport, you can always look back at a loss and say, it was not that play. There were other plays that if we had executed those plays, it shouldn't have come down to the throw by Connor Norby.
Yeah, I mean, I think last time we were on the show here a couple weeks ago, the word of the day was consistency, and I think that that still very much applies. The pitching staff, you know, and Cliff uses a lot of guys, and that's his philosophy. That's his methodology. But everybody has to be ready, and everybody has to do their job. No program can continue to give the number of free passes, be it walks or hit by pitch. And it's so funny, I hear, you know, Corey Bloor talk about, you know, it seems like when we hit a bunch of guys, it's because they crowd the plate. Well, the reality is the plate is the plate. The batter's box is about, I mean, these guys have to go pitch. And it's, and I think it was pretty cool from what Corey was saying in the broadcast that the message to the pitching staff was don't be afraid to pitch. Like, go do what you do. Go do what you're good at. If you hit a guy, hit him. Sometimes it just becomes a kind of it is what it is. But I think the consistency going forward will be the difference in how far this team goes. And look, let's not fool ourselves. Gavin Williams being 8-0 right now is awesome. Gavin, just the law of large numbers says at some point Gavin's going to spit the bit. Now, he may not, but the expectation would be that, hey, we have to manage that downside. What the kid's done is unbelievable. Hopefully he can stay there, but when you look at the numbers where we're only getting 4 innings out of starters on an average across the season, that's very, very difficult. And it doesn't, to me, doesn't say that the bullpen is not as deep as we thought it was coming in. It says that we're overusing the bullpen. When you're seeing guys make 2, 3, 4 appearances in a weekend, that's a lot and not necessarily the recipe for success, but let it not be lost of what this team's done trying to kind of find that identity to this point of the year.
It's funny you mentioned that, Mully. I was going to ask you guys if we could get a couple more. Is it too much? Am I greedy to ask for another inning or two out of our starters? And you brought that up. I'm glad you mentioned that. But Coach O, going down the stretch, I was worried about that. Maybe both of y'all and Bubba can talk about that too, about as far as making it deep into June. We won't mention the O word, but making it, if you're going to make it to Omaha, you're going to have the arms. Do we have the arms as far as the health, being healthy as far as the pitchers are concerned? Mully, when you were talking about the relief pitching there, going to the bullpen so much, are those guys going to be too tired come June?
And, I mean, if you're asking, in my opinion on that, the difference when you get into the postseason is there's this one key word, adrenaline. And guys find more than they thought they had. And you start to learn kind of who wants the ball. And you go with that. And, obviously, Colemore, like, Mayhew was great, whatever. Gavin was great. Cam Colemore did everything but do the laundry this weekend. and I mean, he answered the bell time and time again. Again, philosophy wise, and it's changed so much since I played in and coached, and obviously didn't coach at East Carolina, Coach O. But you know, there's a certain point where in my day, in a little more old school mentality would be. When you have Ginn doing what he's doing, yes, he's one time through the lineup, but maybe you leave him a little bit longer. He's seen everybody once. He's thrown 9 perfect. Leave him a little bit longer. Cliff does it. That's not his style of play. He's going to play the matchups. He's going to go with the numbers. And the analytics are exponentially better than anything I ever looked at. And Coach O, I would think you would probably agree. We just didn't. We would look at a sheet and go, all right, this guy's got, you know, his ratios are all strikeouts to walks. So we're going to go see a few more pitches if this dude has historically walked guys. We didn't know if it was left versus right, right versus left. We didn't have all that. It was, you kind of had to, you know, honestly, you had to go with your gut. Cliff is far more well-informed. And, you know, I think that the depth of the staff is there. They have to do their job. And, you know, we also didn't have the physical training that's available now. These kids are capable of throwing on, you know, the next day. If they throw 20, 25 pitches, they could turn and throw the next day. That was lifting weights was a new thing when I was playing. So it's, you know, I think it's there. It obviously it'd be great to get five out of every start. If we can get five out of every start and turn over to the bullpen, I like our chances. It's, and right now the number one guy, Tyler Smith, getting 2 1/3, 2 2/3 out of his starts on average is the Achilles heel of the pitching staff right this minute. That could change next time he goes out.
Yeah, it certainly, the depth is certainly there. I totally concur with you guys. And when you use a lot of pitchers like Cliff does, it allows guys like Ginn, Beal, Rose, who threw today. Yeah, it allows those guys to step up and win a game that you can call it a big game, you can call it another game, but hey, it won the series for the Pirates today. And those guys were a major part of that. Now, sure, Gilmore, Mayhew, they have a lot of innings behind them, but as Mully just alluded to, if the arm's taken care of, and especially with training procedures as we know today, the way weights are done, particularly for pitchers, the conditioning factors, then, yeah, there's no detriment whatsoever. Let me say something about walks, hit batsmen, and things like that. A pitcher's not going to be effective unless he can pitch inside.
That's right.
Pitcher has to pitch inside. That's all it is to it. And in so doing, there are going to be days like we had in the second game of that doubleheader. If you look back when the Pirates have had problems, they've had multiple walks, they've had multiple hit batters and things of that nature. But when those things are eliminated, but not because they're pitching inside, I mean, they're missing on the other side of the plate as well. It's just one of those days. That's all it is to it. And this team has depth. I don't think there's any question. And I think the fact that that they do attack the zone, I like what Mully said about the hitter or the pitcher. One of the two is going to command the plate. And the pitcher's got to keep that hitter from being the aggressor a lot of times. Sure, they're going to be walks. They're going to be, again, hit batters. But at the same time, they're going to be low ERAs like the Pirates are possessing at this time as well. So, yeah, I think the depth is there. And I think that depth is showing very well now with the inclusion of certain players like we saw three today.
And, look, I think kudos goes out to Zach Womack and the job he does to keep these guys healthy, to keep them kind of forward facing, their strength coach. I mean, it's almost hard to describe how important those things are. But when you go to these major Division I programs, and I don't care what the sport is, and you look at the money that's been spent on the ability to rehab, the ability to turn players and get them ready to go again, there's no mystery. You need your best guys available. And I think what Womack has done, along with the strength coach, along with the, you know, Coach Dietz, I mean, that all that stuff figures into where this all, you know, kind of where this all ends up.
And that's two consecutive Sundays now that Johnny Holseth has gotten the job done. You guys mentioned, you know, Ginn, Beal, and Gross. Again, his longest outing in his five appearances prior to today had been an inning and a third. And, you know, it had primarily been late in ball games to eat up innings when we didn't want to use other arms. And today, you know, he's pitching in a much different situation type ball game. goes three innings and doesn't allow a hit or a run.
Yeah, no, and I think we said this a few weeks ago. You look at the teams that win at the highest level. Omaha, obviously, is awesome. They always get innings from people or from guys that you go, like the announcers are going, we didn't even talk about this guy in our prep meetings. We didn't even know. And now, you know, and so Ginn right now is that guy. I mean, he's the guy that's coming out, and like the Ghost kid, there's a lot of upside with that cat. I mean, he's got, if you look at him physically, he's got the physical makeup of a big leaguer. And I'm talking strictly like, what's he, 6'3", 6'4", legs up to his armpits, loose arm, everything's there. I would guess they're probably wanting him to develop and command the second pitch, kind of like we saw with Gavin Williams and his development. But when you start looking at these guys, there's a lot there. And, I mean, again, what they've gotten out of Cam Colmore has been amazing. He's out there like he's, you know, 7 feet tall and bulletproof. I mean, he just goes and pitches with confidence. So, I mean, who knows what this team can do? It's every game at this point is huge, especially as it relates to hosting a regional. Whatever messaging took place today with Coach Dietz and with Cliff to the pitching staff, and it was probably much like, hey, guys, this is your chance, kind of seize the day. And, man, damn if they didn't do it. I mean, I was impressed. I mean, I was really, and then obviously late runs. I mean, you put up a three spot in the ninth. That is demoralizing to the other team. All Cincinnati wanted to do was make this a race of the bullpens and feel like we've already seen everybody. Remember, nobody pitched today that they hadn't already seen, which is a huge deal. They wanted to get back into that pen thinking they could beat the pen. They kind of stay nip and tuck for a long time. Then all of a sudden, East Carolina puts up three in the ninth. It was over at that point. There was really barely a need to play the bottom of the ninth.
Let me say this, too, if you don't mind, on those young guys who pitched well today, and others as well, with the postseason coming up, we can't say now that they haven't been battle-tested, they haven't been in meaningful games, and that they haven't been in pressure situations, because all of them now have. That's the part that will step forward for us later on.
No doubt about it. Welcome into the show, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. And you notice, Coach, he's late again. And Coach Mully and Coach Overton, you guys going to make him stay late after practice?
I'm consistent.
Hey, Kyle, it takes no talent to be on time, son.
Yeah. Well, but you tell my wife to put up the pressure washer herself next time, because I was on pressure washer duty, trying to get everything put up, taken apart and put up, and just lost track of time. I do apologize for my tardiness, guys, but I don't know what's been touched on, but I'll just paint with broad strokes from what I saw this weekend. I like the way we played on the road and took care of business. The games were competitive. We won three out of four, obviously, to state the obvious. When we lost in extra innings. I love that Cincinnati seems to have gotten so much better since the first of the year when we played them. They're playing good baseball. I like that we had to be competitive to win these games late in the season, because that's what we're going to see in postseason play. Blowing people out right now ain't going to do you any good.
Well, we covered all that, Kyle, but thank you for chiming in. That's perfect.
Well, show's over now. There we go.
Now, guys, something I wanted to specifically bring up about game one, you know, they came out and they put up a couple runs early on Gavin Williams, something that really hadn't been done in quite some time. And then and they had answered the Pirates' two spot. So then the Pirates respond with several runs of their own and then come right back out and put up a zero. And that was huge in that first game that the Pirates won, I guess, 8-4.
Yeah, no, it's, And I'm sure Coach O will agree. When I was in the dugout, win the inning. If you win every inning, you're not going to lose a ball game. So just respond, go up. There's no such thing as a 5-run home run. Let's go about our approach. We've worked on all this and win the inning. And that's what they did. I mean, and so much of that goes back to Cliff's hatred for the batting average. I couldn't agree more. It's quality at bats. It's go up and, we have these parameters and we're going to do what we can do to hit these parameters. And if we do this, more than likely, we will be successful. And that's what he does. That's what his club does. And, when you see Norby laying down bunts, the message is there that this is one of the best hitters in the country. He's obviously our guy now, arguably Francisco's right there. But we're going to ask this guy to do it, so we're certainly going to ask you to do it. So mentally be prepared to go up there. I would love to know, and I don't know, how many squeeze or bunts that were had this weekend led to runs. And I would bet that's a double-digit number over four games. So I mean, it's a culture thing, and it's a philosophy. And I'm going to tell you, it's very difficult to bunt a guy that's throwing a firm fastball that's got a little action on it. That is only as efficient and effective as it is for the Pirates because they work on it so much.
And like you're saying, Mully, it can come from anywhere in the lineup. Like we used to always see with Eric Tyler several years ago, you can see it from Thomas Francisco, and you did, and you see it in a safety squeeze situation. You see it, bunting for a base hit with two outs when the defense is aligned in a certain way. You can see it from anybody.
Yeah, and it's funny. People watch pro ball and they go, the pro guys are playing the shift. Everybody's playing the shift now. And they go, well, why doesn't Trout bunt against the shift? Well, I will tell you right now, if Mike Trout wants to bunt against the shift in professional baseball, I'll just give him first base. Like, he didn't even have to make the effort to bunt. College baseball is so much different because, quite frankly, there are no Mike Trouts in college baseball. He's the best player in the game, in my opinion. But, no, the execution – to see that third baseman over as a left-handed hitter, the third baseman's over, almost playing short, shortstop straight up, second back, and they're giving you that bunt. And I'm going to tell you, it's not easy, guys. And anybody that thinks it is, let's go out to Clark McClair tomorrow. We'll set the pitching machine up throwing 92 to 94, and you lay that bunt down. It's only the way it is because these guys work at it so hard.
No question, Coach O. Mully makes a great point that's why we're sitting – myself, I'll speak for myself. That's why I'm sitting in the stands, because bunting period is not easy. I can't imagine 92 miles an hour to lay that bunt down and to lay it down where you want it.
Yeah, a lot of variables to bunting, and there's a very fine art to it. But there's so many different types and different ways. You guys alluded to the squeeze bunt, but drags and pushes a big weapon. We can move just moving runners in certain situations are almost a must. We saw that occur in the extra inning affair, especially with the runner starting on second base in extra innings now for conference games. But as you guys said, winning on the road by close margins, that's the mark of a really good club. And going back to game one, Bubba, you ask a good question. When your ace gets a little roughed up, sometimes others have to step up. It happened to be the offense on that day. And the offense didn't win the game. But what the offense did was take a little pressure off of Gavin Williams. And that was certainly big in game one.
And, guys, we have comments from our viewers. I know that one of our loyal viewers, Josh Thomas, says, big day today from Danny Beal and Landon Ginn. sitting down 14 straight out of the pen.
Yeah, I mean, enough said. It was, I mean, that's what's got to happen to have a deep run and to have success. And, you know, when, and like Coach said, that these kids have been there now, right? They've got a little taste of it. It's a little more, you know, battle tested and all these cliches, but I mean, that what they did was, I'm sure it was noticed by the coaching staff, and I would also say probably celebrated by the whole team.
And this next question, we already touched on this a little bit in general terms, but I'll go ahead and put it up here. He says, any clue why Franny was told to bunt with two outs and runners on base?
Coach O, I'll let you handle that one.
Well, there's a lot of strategy in baseball, and that's a big part of the game. And it's a part, I'm sure Mully will agree with me on this, it's a part of the game that's sometimes lost in the elements. It's easy to sit back and wait for the three-run homer or sit back and wait for a team to bunch base hits, which, by the way, that's really hard to do. But why was that done? There was something tactically about that. Possibly there was, I won't say there was a shift or not a shift. I really don't know. But there could have been an opening for a push or a drag, either to first or third base side, that would have maybe moved the runners and then, hey, middle of the order coming up behind. Also, we're talking about a close game. Any tactic is a good tactic in a close game.
Well, and I will also say that, remember that the bunt is not always – so bunt slash, like show a bunt, taking a bag, taking a swing, is not always called by the coach, right?
Correct.
It could be that Francisco saw something. He thought, all right, if I can get this thing down, it's an easy hit. When you see guys and the Pirates doing a lot, they show bunt early. If they see the middle infielders vacate, then all they have to – it's literally just move the ball up the middle. So some of that stuff is – I mean, Cliff could have gone to him and go, man, why are you laying a bunt down right here? The player still has to play the game. It's kind of like as a catcher, I put a sign down and I go, okay, let's throw this pitch. And then the guy, you know, we give up a home run and then the pitcher looks at me and I go, oh, whoa. It's your ERA. Like you had to throw the pitch. I'm back here suggesting that this is what I think. You know, so that may or may not have been called a specifically called situation. And the fact that we're talking about it is probably why it happened, because nobody in their dugout thought that Francisco would bunt in that situation. So, I mean, I think that kind of answers itself.
One thing, just generalized baseball question. Can either you, Coach O or Mully, can you guys think of the most high-pressure situation you've seen somebody lay down a bunt with two outs? I mean, has you guys seen it in a playoff game, just somewhere you really were shocked to see it?
I'm sure. Go ahead, Mully.
No. You please.
No, I was just going to say, I'm sure that we've seen several types of situations that were a little unusual. Kyle actually saw in a tie game late one time, third hitter. It was not the cleanup guy, but at the same time, middle of the order guy tried to drop down the drag bunt, right-hander, with two strikes, runner on third. Third baseman was almost back in left field, so why not? Although you think with two strikes, there would have been no shot for that to work. It did. Saw it happen. And it was a regular season game. It wasn't a pressure game, but it was late in a tie game. Very effective. So highly unusual, but those things are effective.
I could think of two times where I've seen bases loaded, bunt for base hits. And understand now, there's basically two categories of bunts. There's I'm going to give myself up to advance my teammate. And then there's a bunt that is an offensive weapon. Like this is I feel like this is an easy hit. And like Coach said, if you got them playing deep, I mean, you got them back and you can lay it down, and you got a good runner at the plate. Typically, guys that are really effective at using the bunt as an offensive weapon are good runners. So they're going to be far more prone. And you got to remember, there's kind of a slug effort. I've seen it a couple times with bases loaded as an effort to get a base hit, maybe out of a guy that struggled a little bit. But it does happen. And again, everybody in the ballpark's like, you know, it's just as surprising as a home run when that happens that way.
How about Jake Taylor in Major League laying it down so Willie Mays Hayes can score from
damn
second?
Damn it, Bubba. I was going to say the same
exactly
thing.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
I think that was a call play, though, wasn't it, Bubba?
Good point.
Yeah, well, he pointed deep. He really had him throw it off. He was calling his shot right before the Bubba. Right before the butt.
That was back when coaches used to give signs. Right now, it's just like you look at your wristband and, you know, 1, 3, 4, whatever. Yeah, so, yeah, no. Good for Jake and Willie.
No question about it. I'm definitely glad that that all worked out for them. That's what we need to have for the Pirates. Certainly with Bubba, do you want to talk about game two of the doubleheader? I guess.
I'm sorry. Say that again, Dave. I had a call coming in.
That's all right. I was saying, do you want to talk about the second game of the doubleheader on Friday night?
Yeah, go ahead.
So one of the things that I want to ask you guys that's a concern for me, maybe I'm just – but it just seems like when we're playing doubleheaders right now, we're losing the second game of the doubleheader. Is that me overreacting as a fan, or is that something to be worried about when it comes regional time?
Well, remember that the opportunity to play doubleheaders, it is real in the regional, it is real in the conference tournament, but you get past those things and those opportunities like that those days are over, barring weather. So, I mean, Dave, we can all read into it, whatever you want to read into it. If you look at the overall results, you know, they kind of speak for themselves.
Yeah, 13 free passes for the Pirate pitching compared to 2 for Cincinnati. We had already touched on that a little bit. And another number that I recall that stood out when I looked at the box score after the game, Cincinnati, 3 for 17 with runners in scoring position. So that was the reason that we still had a chance to win it there late, but unable to do so. But it was amazing after playing with fire so many times that we had the chance to win that game.
Yeah, and certainly opportunities were there. Let's remember, the Pirates still almost won the game, even overcoming many of those obstacles. So that's also a mark of a good club. Dave, to answer your point, though, high percentage of the time, doubleheader is a split. A high percentage, and that's on all levels of baseball.
That's right.
Nothing to worry about in terms of going into regionals or postseason play. And we haven't done it on back ends of double hit. No, high percentage of time there are splits. Correct, Molly.
I think our problem as Pirate fans is that we have the expectation of being let down. The reality is, what this club has done this year in the most unusual of circumstances is pretty special. And, you know, top 10 RPI, I don't know what, I guess Tulane ended up, getting 3 out of 4. I mean, I don't know what else they could do. Yeah, there's been some scuffles. There's been some issues. But that's why you play the games. Like, if it was just a lock deal, then, all right, let's just move these teams. Don't even play the regular season. Let's just move these teams and let them play each other. If they're that much better than everybody else. I think it's way too easy to take the road of what should we worry about when in reality, we should be celebrating, truly excited about what this club has done.
Yeah, I think you're right, Molly. I think it's that, and I made the point earlier this year, this team ain't got nothing to do with all the other teams that made it to Omaha. You know, going to a regional, going to a super regional, winning a conference championship are all great things. It's just that as a fan base, we are so stuck on going to Omaha. We're the most, you know, we've been to the most regionals without going. So it's like you said, we look for every little thing to pick out that's going to keep us from obtaining that goal, when what we should be doing as a fan base is just enjoying what's happening. Enjoy trying to win a conference championship, then go see if we can win a conference tournament, enjoy that, and let happens what happens. You know, we can't worry ourselves and analyze the team into going to Omaha.
No, I mean, look, the message to the team is win this at bat, win this inning, win this game, and then wherever it shakes out, it shakes out. I mean, it's just whatever happens in any other sport at East Carolina, be it football, basketball, whatever, has no bearing over baseball. But the expectation is way too easy to go, well, it's hard being a Pirate. It's hard being this. You know what, folks? We're watching something that's pretty special. And what this club did at home over the course of this season, you may never see that again. And so relish that and understand – these are talented young men. This is a really good coaching staff. This is a great program. And let's just see what happens.
Coach O, a couple of original questions for you before we get back into the games. You've been in those rooms with the NCAA. Do you have a pulse on it, you know, now with North Carolina doing away with capacity limits, do you think those – that the NCAA will stick with the 50% capacity, or is there any chance that we'll see a full house at Clark LeClaire? Do you have any idea? And then the other one is, I missed this conversation. Somebody, you or someone said, is the NCAA not doing 1-16 seedings? Is there not going to be eight national seeds this year? Someone said that the regional champions would be paired with their super regional opponents more based on region than seeding this year.
Well, they have said this 2-3 weeks ago, but it has been brought out that they would pair the super regionals after the regional champions were declared. Now, whether that's going to be according to where teams are in the RPI or a fictitious type of seeding, I don't know. But that has been said, Kyle. Yet at the same time, they have changed a couple of things in midstream. You know, they were going to announce on May 12th and then delayed that just a little while longer. So there's some issues that I'm not sure are set in stone at this particular moment. But I've been told when you say no seeding, there may be a seeding done after the regionals are over. That could well be. I'm being told no seating as such when the selections are announced on selection day. That was the second part of your question. And the first part, Kyle, what did you ask?
If you had heard anything from anybody in the NCAA, if they're going to perhaps change their mind on the 50% capacity for states that now are allowing 100%, such as North Carolina?
Yeah, right now. As of this day, now it could change tomorrow, but right now they're holding at the 50% mark. And I don't want to speak for what ECU will do at this particular point, but it's looking like we're going to go with the 2,500 capacity, which is far more than the 1,200 we allowed in the regular season, because 50% more than when the season started with 1,200. But if it is 50%, we're looking at 2,500.
Yeah, a true 50%, because social distancing is no longer mandated.
Correct.
So that'll at least help get more people in there.
Yes.
It depends on what you read, Kyle, whether or not social distancing is mandated. Or, matter of fact, if y'all don't mind, if all of y'all would put a mask on while we're doing this show, I would feel much more comfortable.
I got one on. I'm actually, that's, you know, you just can't tell because it's a still image. Actually, that I have one on right now at my house.
You know, getting back to the consistency of this team, Josh Thomas chimed in again saying that this team is truly special, haven't lost a series yet. And not only have we not lost the series, and we haven't lost consecutive games, and obviously pretty much top 15 or better in every poll that there is out there, all six, and a very real chance to host a regional, of course, being in the top 20.
Truly special is a really good term. No question about that. And so well said. We've talked a little about the walks. We've even talked about a timely error here and there tonight. But let's not lose thought of the very positive things. You know, how many teams across the country would like to be two strike and two out hitters like the ECU Pirates? There are a lot of phone calls made where this question's asked. What are they doing? How do they do it? But they somehow find ways to score. I think, Muller, you alluded to the three runs that were scored in the ninth. I think, Bubba, you were talking about it today. And that was started with a two-out hit. That was started by Ryder Giles getting a two-out hit. And then moving on from there, so many good things occur. That game was put away today because of two-out hitting.
Yeah, you know what? And I think you look at, I just pulled it up on my phone, 36 and 11. 27-4 at home. Now, 9-7, which was, you know, helped out this week on the road. 18-6 in conference. I mean, there's a lot of programs that would love to have that. I mean, I enjoy what's happening in front of us. The program's right where it needs to be. It's in great hands. And let's just, look, it's a cool week because we got a game Thursday. Like, we get to watch Pirate Baseball. We get to hear Coach O, because I understand that he and his bride are headed south to do the Thursday game. So we got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Coach O, Corey doing their thing. It's a quick turnaround. And then the first game of the tournament, I think, is Tuesday or Wednesday. So we got a lot of baseball coming up. Let's enjoy it instead of lamenting what might not be.
No doubt. Coach O, will the team stay in Florida after the South Florida series and just head down to Clearwater, or are they going to come back to Greenville first?
No. They'll stay down after Saturday's game. Sunday will be off, and then Monday is a practice day in Clearwater. And Clearwater, just across the bay from Tampa, so it's right there.
Okay.
And, going back to kind of some of the points the viewers have made and speaking about the consistency, you know, if you look at the ACC, 14-team league, and so many teams in that conference, you know, the likes of Clemson, North Carolina, Virginia, all these programs are within five games of 500, to just provide some perspective. NC State did have a sweep this weekend, a much-needed sweep up at Pittsburgh. But so many solid programs, nowhere near the 36-11 overall mark that East Carolina has right now.
Yeah, that's true. And on top of that, many of the schools that you mentioned, excluding NC State, but many of those schools in the ACC really not just losing records, but really poor records within that conference. And that's a detriment to them, even though they may be one or two games above 500. So, yeah, those teams are just – they're just hanging on by a thread, so to speak.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. Dave, are you back with us?
I'm back, finally. Struggling for sure with the internet tonight.
It happens, Dave, it happens.
Yes, it does.
I know this is in East Carolina baseball, but I was just looking at what the Pitt Community College Bulldogs are doing. It looks like they're making a run deep into the conference tournament there in Burlington. You know what? And we get so spoiled in East North Carolina. We got two of the best high school teams, 3A baseball with Rose and Conley. They are both really, really good. We got East Carolina. We got Elm Street Park. Everything that happens over there. We've got Pitt Community College. We get so spoiled that it's almost like we start looking for reasons why not to be successful. The reality is, folks, it's a hotbed for baseball, and there's a lot of good things going on. Like I said, this is a cool week. We get to play, play Thursday, play the weekend, take a couple of days off, and then we go again next week. And I love this time of the year. And then when regional baseball starts, whether East Carolina's here or if they're on the road, they'll be in a regional. I don't see how that wouldn't happen. It's going to be something fun to watch.
Unless we just lose our minds in Tampa, I think we're pretty much locked in to host at this point. I think as long as we split in Tampa, we would host. I mean, I could be wrong, but it seems like at this point, as long as we don't do anything less than split in Tampa, I think we'll host.
Kyle, we got to work on your jinx language. Like, there's some things we don't say. Like, if a guy's throwing a no-hitter, we don't tell him he's throwing a no-hitter. We just kind of let it play itself out. I think the better way to put that, Kyle, would have been, if we go out and take care of business, then the chips will fall where they may, and we should be okay.
Hey, getting back to the pitching staff, as much as we've talked about the pitching up to this point, I don't think we've even touched on Carson Wisenhunt. Carson last Saturday, last weekend against Tulane, 3 innings, 43 pitches. Yesterday, four and a fraction. And, he, I think, threw 75 pitches. So just talk about his progression, getting back to where we need him to be.
I mean, he's one of the best left-handers in the country. I mean, especially, as a freshman, and I mean, look, folks, so this year's fun, but you're going to have that kid, you're going to have Mayhew, you're going to have Ginn, you're going to have Go. The cupboard is full. And I think where he is and what he's doing, he's special. He's special. He's as good as there is out there in his class and what he does in the country, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's very good. No question about that. And young as well. But also the presence of one player also makes a difference to teams. And his presence, I think, has energized this particular club. A lot of confidence, not just when he's on the mound, but when they know he's going out there the next day or the next day. Same with Gavin Williams. But the presence of Carson Wisenhunt has a lot to do with the success of this team.
Coach, who's the best left-handed pitcher you coached?
Well, Mully, it would be easy to say Bobby Patterson because he pitched in the big leagues for so long. But he certainly would be up there. But, there were several good ones. Johnny Beck was good. Tim Langdon was good. We had some good ones.
How about old Brooks Jernigan?
No question. Breaking ball.
So I had – and it's something about, everybody covets left-handed pitching. And there's a reason. There's a different mentality there. I mean, it is what it is. But I had a kid, Brian Hill, who's coaching at Chawan, who really – he didn't throw hard enough to break wet toilet paper. But he would compete, and he would battle you. And I had a kid, Jake Brown, who pitched with the Athletics with Oakland. Kid Jake Cade, who's in the big leagues now, is an outfielder. But those lefties that like do what you think they can do, like they manifest, man, it is such a cool thing to watch, and they are perplexing. Like a good left-hander, left on right doesn't matter. When I got a good left-hander and he can bury his breaking ball on a right-handed hitter's back foot, good luck. You're going to have a long day. Daniel Martin, good luck. But I think that's what we got. Mayhew and Wisdom, these kids are, in my opinion, we'd be lucky to have either one of them. To have both of them is almost crazy. It's almost unfair.
Johnny Robertson chimes in on Facebook saying 3-1 on the road and 7-1 on the season against Cincinnati is pretty strong. Four of the other regional finalists of those 20 teams lost their weekend series to unranked teams. Stanford went 1-2 against Cal, and TCU went 1-2 against UL Monroe. Mississippi State did the same against Missouri, and that game, that series was played in Starkville. And then Pitt, as I mentioned earlier, went 0-3 against NC State, and that was played up in Pittsburgh.
It's college baseball, boys. None of that surprises me. And we also, Carolina swept Louisville. I mean, it's college baseball. I mean, it's the only thing that kind of holds serve is what the Pirates have done. They literally have handled business, had a little scuffle. It is what it is. But they've held serve the whole season. I mean, Cliff says it best, and Coach O, I know I don't have to think you'll agree. Winning a college baseball game is a very difficult thing to do. It's very, very hard. So none of that surprises me, Bubba.
Yeah, and the points that the stats that our listener brings out, very true, very true. But, I mean, you can go even further. Mississippi State losing 2 out of 3 to Louisiana Monroe, and that games like that. I mean, the big teams are going to lose. Vandy's going to lose. We've seen Rocker lose this year. We've seen Leiter lose this year. The good pitchers are going to lose. It's just going to happen. That's all it is to it. College baseball, as Mully said, is so good. It is just difficult to win a game.
Hey, you know what, guys? It wasn't that long ago. There was a little team out of Myrtle Beach, actually Conway, South Carolina, that won the World Series. And if you looked at that team, like if you just took the unis off and you looked at those players, there were very few pro guys. Now, there were guys that got chances, but they were going to be roster fillers. They didn't have a Gavin Williams. They didn't have a Alec Burleson from times past or Brian Packard or, you know, goes on and on. That's the beauty of this game. That's what makes it lovable. Is you just don't know. You roll out there against anybody and on any game. I mean, they talk about any given Sunday. Well, the difference with baseball is We're going to play today. We're going to take a day off. We're going to play again tomorrow. Any day can be a different day. And, man, it's just that's what I love about the game.
Yeah, I think my favorite example of that is Fresno State when they had to win the Mountain West Tournament basically to make it into the regionals and won the national championship.
Well, how about UVA? UVA years back, they had to fight their ass off to get – they won the ACC tournament. And they get the gift of going to San Diego State to open up against Strasburg.
Yeah.
And they beat Strasburg, and they end up playing in the national championship game. I mean, it's college baseball, man. It's just – and UVA never rolls out a lineup that is physically imposing. Like LSU always has 6'1", 6'2", donkeys. That's their small guys. That's never been UVA's game. UVA recruits baseball players and academic kids and whatever. It's a beautiful game. I mean, I've got Baylor and Oklahoma State on right beside me right now. And I'm looking at these kids. They are grown ass men. I'm sorry. I mean, but none of that matters. Baseball's played from the ground up. And it's played between your ears. And if you can just master your skill set, you got a chance to be successful. And I will take our coaching staff over any coaching staff in the country to give these kids that opportunity.
No doubt. Bubba, you were giving some scores earlier. What did Charlotte do this weekend, being they are in the 20 regional sites, and I would look at them as competition being in the same region. And what are some other scores we need to know?
I have to check back on that, Kyle. Being at my son's game this afternoon, I was not able to check the scoreboard the way I would have liked, but I'll get back with you on those. But around the conference, you had Wichita State taking on, you know, next week's opponent. I'm pretty sure they split with USF, and you also had Memphis and Houston splitting, and UCF lost 3 of 4 in New Orleans to Tulane.
So we're one game off on Tulane, is that right, Coach?
A half game.
Half game. And look, next weekend's huge.
Yeah. And no doubt about it.
USF isn't bad, guys. I mean, there's not a team in this conference. I mean, arguably Houston, which is crazy to say, man, we'd love to play Houston, but there's not a bad team in the conference. But next weekend is a big deal. And that could be a difference maker. I think, Kyle, you said it earlier, we need to go get three. I don't think a split leaves a question. Three wins clears all that up.
Yeah, no doubt. I do like the Tulane has to play Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati, obviously we just played them, is playing good baseball. So, who knows what's going to happen, but I'm hoping, like you said, we can at least get three. And meanwhile, Cincinnati, maybe they'll take care of Tulane just to give us a little bit of distance.
No question about it, guys. One of the things I saw quickly, and then we're going to go to our PGX Player of the Week and PGX Pitcher of the Week. Mully, you were talking about our great program we have, East Carolina. Saw a stat, I didn't know this, but we're actually winning percentage-wise in the top 10 of all time, 72 seasons. That's obviously before the season. And our winning percentage, we've won 65% of our games in 72, now 73 seasons. I'm sure that percentage will go up. Not that that matters, but as far as a fan perspective, then certainly that's a big deal and a testament to guys like Coach O and all the coaches that came before Cliff.
Hold on. I'm trying to figure out which way I could point, though. He's the guy, and honestly, I mean, I think and Coach O's a humble man, but when you look back at the history of the coaches that have been here, and Coach O being a huge part of it, it's not a surprise. I mean, when you've had just a litany of guys that have come through here that have done the things they've done. And I can't help but wonder on that note. And I can't help but wonder what if Coach Eclair were still here and everything held serve, would we have been to Omaha? I mean, I think there with Coach Mazie and then with Billy Godwin and now Cliff, I mean, I think we've maintained the level. But, you know, it was something about Coach Eclair. It was something about his I spent 1 year with him, and it was a really impactful year from a personal standpoint and from a learning how things – should happen. But you know, he had Kevin McMullen, and I'll never forget. I get my first college job and I go to Kevin McMullen. I'm like, Coach, I'm recruiting, and I know what I like. I mean, I know what I see. I've been around the game. I mean, I play whatever. But I say, Coach, what's a recruiting philosophy that I can hang my hat on? And guys, y'all love this. He goes, Mully. And anybody's been around him, he always had a top lip like cherry skull, and he wore his glasses and that thick Jersey accent. He goes, Mully, real simple. Good-looking guy, ugly girlfriend, I don't know. Ugly guy, good-looking girlfriend, give him all you got. He's an overachiever. And I'll never forget that. And I've told that story 1,000 times. So we've been very, very fortunate that the trailblazers like Coach O, like Coach Hal Baird before Coach O, and even the Monty Littles, the people over time have established a standard that East Carolina baseball doesn't accept less than greatness. And it's a really, really cool thing.
No doubt about it. And now time for our PGX Player of the Week. Do you want to do that first, Bubba?
Yeah, we'll start off with the PGX Player of the Week. And this week, Connor Norby, no surprise. When you go 10 for 19, you leave us no choice. And Connor reached base 11 out of his 20 plate appearances. So another unbelievable, just remarkable weekend for Connor Norby, who's batting, I think, 423 or 425 at this point. So congratulations to him. And then our pitcher of the week, the PGX pitcher of the week. What about CJ Mayhew? Last week we talked about Cam Colmore and then also Matt Bridges, 3 appearances in relief. And this week, Cam Colmore did the same, but then CJ Mayhew, 5 innings over those 3 appearances, 94 total pitches. He was just so gutsy and really came through, 5 shutout innings, allowing just those 2 hits.
Good choices, Bubba.
It's hard. It's hard to not see Colmore as the pitcher of the week, in my opinion. And I will also say that Agnos as the player of the week, that dude had to do some dirty work. I mean, he was a huge part of the small ball game. I think you went with the obvious, Bubba, and I don't disagree with them. But I don't – I mean, there are 4 or 5 guys. When you win 3 out of 4 on the road in a situation like this, there's going to be lots of guys that contribute in big ways. And, I mean, good calls, but maybe different the way I would have gone. But I'm going to look at it through coach's eyes too.
No doubt. Guys, as far as the – this week, obviously, being a huge series that we're talking about with USF, it's the last 4 games. Chance to have a 40 games in the regular season. Win them. What about as far as the series goes? What are your keys to victory this weekend on the road, Mully or Coach? Whoever wants to take it first?
Seem to be that person. We got to throw strikes. We got to put balls in play. I mean, it's the same things, guys. This stuff is not. There's no magic recipe. It's go play the game. It's win the inning, win the at bat, win the at bat offensively, win the at bat defensively. Throw strikes. Put balls in play. Do the little things. We are more talented, I believe. I believe we're better coached, but we just got to go out there and play the games. I think it's that simple.
Yeah, and 2 things I really believe in that. One, Pirates do really well, and that's make adjustments as they go. As they get a feel for this South Florida team, the adjustments they make to score runs or to move runners or to put the pieces in place to make big innings even, or the pitching staff stepping up like the 3 guys today, those adjustments are really big. And the second thing is just keeping the winning mentality on the road. It's almost like from a mental standpoint, they turn it up a notch once they go on the road, and it's been successful to this point and will continue to be so if the Pirates place emphasis on those 2 things.
Something else I wanted to call attention to, Dave, before we go to these comments. the performance of Ryder Giles. Ryder has a 5-game hit streak now, and you know, he had 6 hits this weekend, and you know, he's only struck out once in probably his last 20 or 25 at bats. So him coming around much plus, and it's great to see the one. And earlier we were talking about Charlotte. Charlotte went 2-2, and that was out at Rice. And then Shell Powell had a question. And Coach O, you may be more up to speed as far as Cliff's contract, but he said, when is Coach Godwin's contract up? Worry about him being gone to a program like LSU, Ole Miss, or Florida?
Well, we always worry about a real successful coach leaving, and as long as the Pirates keep winning as they have done under him, that's going to be a worry. But let's remember, he's an ECU guy, and he's a guy that is entrenched in this program and has a lot invested in it, and that's what's of the utmost importance. His contract's not up anytime soon, I know that.
No, in fact, as a matter of fact, guys, I believe last year, his contract was till 23, and they extended it, I believe, last year until 27. That's off the top of my head. I believe I remember reading that. I don't know. Maybe Mully can remember that. But I believe it's 20. It doesn't really matter. I mean, I think it was 27 is when his contract is up. It's not anytime soon, so it's nothing. Shell, it's nothing to worry about. That's the least of our worries right now.
I don't think it's for 27. I could be wrong on this. Coach O would know this. We can't, in the state of North Carolina, you can't have anything longer than a 5-year contract for a coach. Is that not correct?
I'm not sure what the length of it is, but I do, like Dave said, I do know it is a ways out. It was redone last year. I do know that.
Yeah, and it really doesn't matter. SEC.
You know, I understand why we're talking about this, but why are we talking about this? I mean, it's.
I agree.
And those contracts are leverage. Those contracts are. It's let's stay focused on what's at hand.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. And if he wants to go, and an SEC school wants to buy that contract out, it doesn't matter if it's for 2030.
I can tell you this. Cliff Godwin loves East Carolina University. Cliff Godwin's family's here. Cliff Godwin bleeds purple and gold. Whatever else happens is strictly a business choice, and that'll all take care of itself in due time. It's no different than saying, what if Gavin Williams you can't worry about what the money is. You can't take care of today, and tomorrow will be what it is.
Mully, I want to give you a shout out too before we go. I know you guys have stayed a long time with us, but I was looking at ecupirates.com, and I was looking at the work you did with the indoor hitting facility and the stuff. I wanted you to talk about that before we go. I know you don't like to toot your own horn, but I was just thinking about you the other day. I said, man, that technology you have, I've never stepped foot in there, but it felt like, I know it sounds corny, but it felt like I was in that facility based on the hard work you and your team did.
Well, and what's funny is these guys, I mean, I talked to Jeff Palumbo last week, and, you know, and what's lost in this is Coach Palumbo's value to the program, and it's exponential. And I think anybody close to the program will tell you that. But we're actually meeting Tuesday, Dave, believe it or not. We're meeting Tuesday to redo a lot of that because we want to update. We've got new technology. We got some cool stuff that can be a benefit to the Pirate faithful and Coach Palumbo, Coach Godwin, Coach Dietz, all these guys. And I'll tell you this, 5-star, my company takes me to lots of interactions with lots of really impressive people, Carolina baseball, Wake Forest, Virginia, but the staff with Blake Hardegree, with Austin Knight, and I know I'm gonna leave somebody out, but with obviously with Cliff, with Palumbo, with Jason Ventura, they are all first class people. And they want so much for that program that you just have to rest easy knowing that it's in the right hands. It's where it needs to be. The culture is so strong. It is so embedded in what they do every day that regardless of whoever were to come in after, if that situation ever happens, man, it's just, it's a cool thing. I mean, it is a corporate culture that Cliff is the CEO of, and he believes in what they're doing, and he is hell-bent and completely focused on the future of East Carolina baseball. So, I get to spend Tuesday morning, Jeff and I are meeting at 9 o'clock to redo some of what you saw, Dave, that is awesome. And we're going to make it better. And that's what this program's all about. They're taking awesome. They're taking great things and improving them. And that's how you get to where you ultimately want to be.
And that obviously helped with the COVID year, too. We talked about this when we had you originally on, I believe, about how with the COVID year, it was just like, I guess the stars aligned. It was the perfect storm. I could use any cliche, perfect timing, if you will, for you to have that technology and bring your team in and help recruiting, did it not? I mean, I know the Cliff's done a great job in Palumbo and everybody there, but it also helped.
You know what, Dave? And cliches prove to be true because they stand the test of time. So, yes, and you got to remember, when I approached Cliff with doing this project, it was pre-COVID. And he believed in their facilities. He believed in the perpetuation of the dream enough to where he point blank told me, he goes, Molly, I am the CEO of East Carolina Baseball. This is my program. I'm not afraid to invest. And I will tell you guys, he was not hesitant to write a check out of his personal checkbook. He was not that's the kind of person that Cliff Godwin is. And again, we're going to make it better. And we've got several things that we're tasked with as a partner of East Carolina baseball to make this vision better. But yes, during COVID, it was pre-COVID, it was a good idea. During COVID, it was a way of life. But it has become an essential part of what East Carolina baseball does from a recruiting standpoint.
Is there anything that you can tell us as far as technology-wise coming up of things that we may be able to see your company do for a program like East Carolina?
But look, we have developed a way to code our projects to make them into video games. So now when the average consumer being the 15 to 17 year old kid, they could go in and play a video game and learn all about the history of East Carolina baseball. Hell, there may even be something in there by Coach Gary Overton, not to give anything away, but when it comes out, it's a cool thing. And it's the way that the recruits consume information now, as opposed to when Coach O was the head coach in East Carolina. He sent a kid in Atlanta, Georgia, a letter, and the letter meant the world to me. Everyone I got meant the world to me. But those letters now are not, it's not, they are important. But the most important thing is the ability to interact, convey your message, and show your culture and what the program's all about. And that's how we help.
And Molly, as far as I know, you do a lot of athletics, but you could also do businesses, right? It's not if you want to get in contact with Five Star, right?
Sure.
You could do other things.
If it's the right strategic partner, we are very happy to talk. We don't take every job. We don't do if it doesn't make sense for the long haul. We just don't do it. That's part of our culture. But no, we are we're super happy to help if anybody needs us.
How can they call you? I know it's kind of like a live commercial, but how can people call you?
My cell phone number is 252-999-0001. And I answer it all the time. And I thank you for the opportunity to talk about it. That wasn't why I was here tonight. I want to talk Pirate baseball, and I felt like Coach O will be here, and as being in the same company of one of my heroes and a guy that has done so much in the game. That's why I'm here. But I appreciate the opportunity to peddle my wares.
No doubt. And one final thing, guys, I promise Josh Thomas mentioned about Coach Godwin got his 250th win. I know, Mully, you're going to say, and so will Coach, the very fact a lot of players to get 250 wins, but that's a really big accomplishment. And what are your final thoughts? I promise this will be the last question.
I mean, it speaks for itself. 250. Coach, how many did you end up with?
It was 320-something. I'm not sure what it was, Mully, but Coach Godwin's 285, many more to come, and that's what's important. 250, a good milestone, but many more to come for him.
Completely agree. And, I could tell you this, and, Coach, if you disagree, please call me out, but Cliff Godwin couldn't care any less. And it's not that it's not important to him. Those are not his wins. Dave, it's kind of like we talked about your opportunity to win your first game as a head coach. And I said, whoa, Dave, remember, coaches only lose games. Players win games.
Yeah.
And Cliff and his staff and their ability to recruit and bring in really, really good players – He's proud of the program, just as Coach Overton was and is, just as I was in my situations. It's a prideful thing, but I can tell you Cliff Godwin hadn't a bit more thought about it. I'm sure they gave him a ball and it was signed and it was great, but that was the end of it.
Right. That'll be something after his career that maybe he can cherish, but right now he's in the hunt for we still have, obviously, a regular season championship. You have the tournament championship, and you have regional, hopefully super regional Omaha. There's a lot of stuff that the goals that Coach wants is still in front of him.
That's right. And we get to watch, again, guys, we're going to watch baseball Thursday. We're going to hear Coach O, Corey Glore. We're going to be locked in on Thursday. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We're going to enjoy it, drink it in. And then understand that the following week we'll start the conference tournament on Tuesday or Wednesday with our first game. Man, that what else can you want? That's what it's all about.
And Coach, I understand that you're going to be down at USF and you're going to be in Clearwater. How did you manage that? Usually you're not on the road game. So how did you pull off that coup?
Well, Dave, I have been to the conference tournament many times and several years in a row now, but, just with South Florida being in or being our last opponent, it worked out. And so that's looking forward to that.
Hey, Coach, can I catch a ride with you and the bride to go down? We can have a good time.
Absolutely. More than welcome, Mully.
Any final thoughts before we go, guys?
Go Pirates.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, and we'll put – I know that those games we're talking about start on, as Mully and Coach were talking about, on Thursday. Bubba, I know, probably has a graphic that we'll put up before we end the show. Bubba?
No, my son's games took precedent. I was not allowed to produce a graphic. So.
All right, well, we have those games. Obviously, we'll talk about that this week. We have a big show coming up on Wednesday night, right, Bubba? I guess he's got – well, we have a big show on Wednesday, obviously. Patrick Johnson, 94.3 The Game. We also have Matt Doherty, wrote a book about his coaching career. We'll have him on Wednesday night as well at 8 o'clock. So love to have you guys. And then we'll be back next Sunday. Hopefully we'll be talking about the Pirates victorious in USF. Thank you, Mully, very much, man, for the overtime you spent here on Extra Innings. Coach, both of you guys mean the world to me. I appreciate both of y'all being on the panel tonight, Extra Innings. means a lot. Thanks to the great folks at Next Level Training Center. Trent, appreciate you guys very much for all that you do for baseball and Pitt County and beyond. Bubba, man, thank you so much. Thanks to Kyle. We'll see you next time. Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody. Go Pirates.
See you guys.
Thank you. Thank you.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!